Good morning, everyone. I now call this remote meeting of the House Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee to order. We will start by taking the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Lead Swazinski.
Here.
Representative Bierman. Representative Bowe. Representative Bowe.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Hollins. Representative Hollins. I think she just joined. Representative Hollins.
Present. Sorry.
No worries. Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Representative Igo.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Lippert.
Present.
I believe Representative Bowe just joined. Representative Bowe.
Present.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
Present.
Representative Mecklen.
Present.
Representative Munson. Representative Munson.
Present.
Representative Stevenson.
Present.
A quorum is present. Members, we are going to be continuing with House File 278, which we we had our public testimony on last Thursday. We were unable to complete the public testimony for those who had signed up in advance. And so we have five more individuals who we're going to hear from this morning. And I'll ask that those individuals could please keep their comments to 2 minutes each to be fair with the folks who we had testify last week. So first we will start with Joe Hoppe. Mr. Hoppe, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good morning. Joe Hoppe with Otter Tail Power. Otter Tail Power is an investor-owned utility that provides electricity for residential, commercial, and industrial customers in Minnesota and the Dakotas. We are the second smallest investor-owned utility in the United States. We are the largest subsidiary of Otter Tail Corporation, which is listed on the NASDAQ with stock symbol OTTR. Otter Tail Power serves 400 small towns, 153 of them are in Minnesota. We serve more than 132,000 customers in a service area that spans over 70,000 square miles. Otter Tail Power is committed to being a part of these discussions. We have a track record of integrating increasingly clean, reliable, and affordable energy for our customers. In 2022, we will have decreased our CO2 emissions by 30% since 2005. We will continue our progression to even lower emissions as we make adjustments to our existing electric generation fleet along timelines that maintain competitive electric rates for consumers. We would like to respectfully make the point that public policy should not outpace one, technological advancements necessary to achieve a carbon-free power sector, and two, the ability of electric consumers to bear the cost of those public policy expectations. Each electric utility has a different set of existing generation assets that call for something other than a cookie-cutter approach. As mentioned earlier, we serve 153 small towns in Minnesota. A typical community served is Winger in Polk County. In 2018, Winger had a population of 195 people. The median household income was about $31,000. Lower income households in rural areas pay a disproportionate share of their household income on home energy costs and necessary travel for work, shopping, and medical care. As we make changes in our generation mix, we need to ensure this happens at a pace that is affordable for our consumers and the commercial and industrial customers that employ many of them. We support clean, reliable, and affordable energy. Technological advances will continue to occur to help us further that goal on a timeline that our customers can afford. We hope policymakers remain mindful that there is an important balance necessary. Citizens are best served by an incremental approach that considers both available technology and cost to consumers. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Hoppe. Next, we will hear from Helen Klanna. Ms. Klanna, welcome to the committee. I don't know if Ms. Klanna is with us. So we will go to our next testifier, Hallie Norman. Ms. Norman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much for having me, Chair Long, committee members. My name is Hallie Norman, and I'm here today to testify on behalf of or in support of the 100% renewable energy bill. My name is Hallie Norman. I'm a Minneapolis resident and a leader with Take Action Minnesota. And 2 years ago, I tried to speak with one of your colleagues in the Senate about the 100% bill, and he had me thrown out of the room by the sergeant at arms. Today, I'm here again because, like then, and even more so now, I fear for my life and my future. I know some of you have children and likely want the best future for them. I want that too for myself and for the children that I hope to have. Right now, the place that I grew up in is inundated by wildfire smoke every summer, so bad that I asked my mother to buy a gas mask. Last summer, that smoke came all the way here from the West Coast to us. My home in Minneapolis sees warmer winters, more extreme cold, and less snow than we've ever known. And my family of farmers in the Midwest experience more flooding, more erratic weather, and more erratic weather, which hurts their ability to support themselves and their families. Our futures are under threat now, and will continue to be if we don't take action. We need 100% renewable energy and clean energy for all Minnesotans, because without it, we won't have a future. We need it so that my generation and future generations can breathe clean air, drink clean water, and cherish all of the natural beauty surrounding us. We need the jobs that these industries create to support ourselves and our families. 100% creates a path forward for us, but more than that, it gives us a chance at the lives that we deserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Norman. Next, we are hearing from Eliza Vandenbush. Ms. Vandenbush, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and thanks so much for making the time for me to speak. My name is Elisa Vandenbush. I'm a chemical engineering PhD candidate at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I'd like to express my thanks to Rep. Long and Governor Walz for their leadership on this initiative, and I want to express my strong support for 100% carbon-free energy in Minnesota. I've been working on clean energy technology research for the last 8 years, and I am so inspired by all of the work the University of Minnesota is doing in this space. We have hundreds of dedicated scientists and engineers advancing the necessary technology for clean energy. And what I've learned from them is that thanks to this work here in Minnesota and similarly across the country, we have the technology for this state to be a national leader by producing 100% of our energy from carbon-free sources. What we need now is for our state government to set a bold policy that meets the moment we're facing. I support renewable energy because it's a cost-effective strategy, and developing in this space will benefit the entire state with cleaner air, a better environmental outlook, and good jobs. The interim renewable energy targets should be strengthened and accelerated to make sure that Minnesotans are able to access the benefits of in-state renewable energy development sooner, including jobs, workforce development, cleaner air, and other economic benefits, especially to aid in economic recovery. I also urge careful consideration of environmental justice when investing in technologies to meet this goal. The benefits of decarbonization must be distributed distributed equitably to help correct the impact of current and historic systemic injustices against Black and Indigenous people in Minnesota. This includes prioritizing emissions reductions in communities overburdened by pollution impacts and directing jobs and investments to historically impacted communities and those facing fossil fuel plant closures. It also includes removing waste incineration, which contributes to air pollution and global warming, as an eligible resource for this carbon-free energy standard. In sum, this is a perfect opportunity for Minnesota to regain its position as a national leader in renewable energy. And I urge you to pursue this goal boldly to protect my future and that of my children. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Vandenbush. I don't believe that our other two testifiers have joined yet. If they join later, perhaps we can try to squeeze them in. But at the moment, I believe that we'll complete our public testimony. And so at this time, I will turn the gavel virtually over to Vice Chair Akam to chair the meeting.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative, I guess at the moment, Long. And the bill we have on the agenda today is House File 278. Representative Long, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 278 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
All right. And then Representative Long, would you like to tell us about your bill?
Yes, thank you so much. We heard, I think, some compelling testimony over the last 2 weeks on this committee. And we've heard that inaction on clean energy will harm the residents of Minnesota and our environment. Dr. Mark Seeley told us that Minnesota is among the top states seeing rapid changes nationwide to our climate. And this is not a someday problem. We heard in our very first hearing testimony on the impact that climate change is having in our state right now. It's damaging our health with more Lyme disease and more heat-related illness. There was an extremely compelling hearing yesterday with the Preventive Health Committee for those who were able to join about the health impacts that are facing Minnesotans from climate change. It's impacting our farms from increased flooding and weather variability. It's impacting our cities with more costly repairs and upgrades to our infrastructure. And it's impacting our way of life from damaging our trout streams to harming the forestry industry. And we've also heard in committee that we are not on track to meet our state's greenhouse gas reduction goals. Our goal was a 15% reduction by 2015, and we only reduced 12%. And in the last report that we just heard in committee, our emissions have actually increased over the past 2 years. And we are not on track to hit our state's goals of reducing emissions 80% by 2050. And even this goal, frankly, is short of what science says we need to achieve. But the good news is that renewable energy means jobs for Minnesotans and has great potential for our state. Minnesota doesn't have fossil fuels, so we are currently sending $13 billion out of state each year to buy energy. That's 4% of our state GDP that could be used to create jobs right here. We should spend this to build wind and solar instead and make the 140 tons of steel in each wind turbine with Minnesota-made taconite. So here's the good news. We heard in our second hearing from solar developers creating jobs at the Red Lake Nation, from farmers diversifying their income with solar, from workers who are building the wind and energy efficiency jobs of the future. Mortenson Construction told us renewable energy is now their largest business and that Minnesota companies have installed nearly half of all wind turbines in the U.S. in the last decade. We also know that 100% clean energy is the cheapest long-term option. The share of carbon-free energy in the power sector has grown from 30% in 2005 to 50% in 2020. Our state's largest utility, Xcel Energy, was the first in the country to commit itself to 100% clean energy, which it plans to reach by 2050. Last year, Great River Energy became the largest generation and transmission utility in the country to commit to rapid decarbonization, aiming for 95% carbon pollution reductions by 2023. And just last week, Minnesota Power became one of only 20 or so large utilities nationwide to commit to 100% clean energy. This is remarkable leadership from our state. And each of these companies has said that while climate change and environmental stewardship are factors in their decisions, they are fundamentally cost-driven. And now about 80% of electric customers in Minnesota have a utility that is committed to rapid decarbonization. We also heard from some of our biggest businesses in the state. We have more than 280 major global companies that have pledged to meet their needs with 100% clean energy by 2050 or sooner. And those include 3M and Ecolab, which we heard from in our committee. So why is there so much momentum towards clean energy? Well, it's pretty easy. Wind is the cheapest form of electricity, period. If somebody offered you a free coal plant or to pay for a brand new wind farm, you'd take the wind farm because it would be cheaper to build that farm than to operate the coal plant. Solar is cheaper than any new fossil fuel plants now and is expected to be cheaper than wind within 5 years. None other than Flint Hills announced this week that it is building up to 30 megawatts of solar. Why? Because it would cost less. Both wind and solar also have the added benefits of a guaranteed cost, so there's no susceptibility to fuel price swings. And we also know that 100% clean energy is achievable. You heard from the author of a landmark study about what is possible in 2035 and 2040 using today's technology. We heard that 90% by 2035 is not only possible nationwide, that it would be cheaper and it would create more jobs than the status quo. And also that Minnesota's tremendous wind and solar resources make Minnesota's path to 100% clean energy even easier than other states. I mean, we can move even faster. So why do we need policy? Why not just let the market push for clean energy changes? Well, as President Biden said yesterday with his climate day, we have no time to waste when it comes to tackling the threat of climate change. Markets alone fail to consider the impact of climate pollution on our health or the environment. They don't calculate, for example, the estimated 2,000 early deaths in the Twin Cities annually from air pollution. They don't look at the fact that these health impacts are felt most by the poor and by people of color. Markets don't take into account the need to make our state or international greenhouse gas goals. And we also know that policy can create real opportunity for job growth right here in Minnesota. So to wrap up, in one of the testimonies that I think stood out most to me last week was Carsten Finholt, a college student who pointed out that in 2040, when this bill requires that we reach 100%, he would be 39. And this stuck with me because that's how old I am. And he went to the same college that I did. And he was imploring us to move quickly so that his generation would not be the one that would be stuck with the problem. And I agree with him. We have to get this transition right so that the next generation of college students and those behind them can work on the next challenges and not have an even worse problem that we're leaving to their generation. It's time to set the next energy vision for Minnesota and to give our state the opportunity to lead our nation's clean energy transition. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present the bill.
Thank you, Representative Long. And before we transition to questions from the committee, we're going to circle back, and I believe Commissioner Reinhart has joined us, and so if she would like to provide her testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Good morning. I am Victoria Reinhart, Ramsey County Commissioner, and I'm here today to speak to county interests related to portions of the 100% Clean Energy Standard legislation. While the goal of carbon-free is laudable, and we fully support the intention of a long-term carbon-free electricity goal, there needs to be flexibility on what qualifies as carbon-free. The community benefit of waste energy needs to be weighed with its role in generation and greenhouse gases, generation of greenhouse gases. Ramsey and Washington counties own and operate the Recycling and Energy Center in Newport, which processes 450,000 tons of trash per year, recovers recycling, metals for recycling, produces refuse-derived fuel used by Xcel Energy to generate electricity. We are well on our way and very proud of the fact that we are well on our way to enhancing the center to recover more value from trash, which means sorting, recycling, and additional materials beyond metals, recovering, recycling, and organic waste such as food waste, and using the remaining material with new emerging technologies that would be carbon-free. Ramsey County strongly supports the waste management hierarchy outlined in the statute. Reduction, reuse, recycling ahead of waste processing and landfilling. And so really resource recovery facilities are at the nexus of two important state policies, advancing renewable energy and managing waste in an environmentally responsible manner. These waste facilities also play an important role in reducing greenhouse gases when they divert waste from landfills. The development of alternatives to this takes time. Without waste to energy, the alternative is landfilling. Landfill gas produces far less usable energy than resource recovery facilities. The value of the recycled materials, of course, is lost. And historically, they have contaminated groundwater and emit methane and other potent greenhouse gases. Counties are not only charged with dealing with solid waste, but also the health of all its residents. Waste processing technology allows us to protect our wastewater resources and mitigate air quality impacts inherent to landfilling. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. Ramsey County stands ready to work with you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, and the committee to find solutions to waste and energy management that allows us to not only deal with solid waste, but also protect the health and well-being of our residents. So what we are asking for is the transition time. The goal of carbon-free electricity is very important. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Reinhart. And with that, I think we're going to transition to questions from the committee. If people have questions, they can use the raise hand function, and we will try to go in order. And let's see, do we have any? Maybe we don't have any questions. Oh, I see. Okay. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question is for the last testifier. If potentially solid waste incineration plants are part of this bill and removed, what would you plan B to actually deal with waste? Would you ship it out to rural areas and bury it? Or what would be your future plan if this was to move forward?
The only opportunity or the only possibility is to landfill it if we can't process it. And I think that it's important to understand that we have, the state has set a 75% recycling goal, and we're really working towards that. We've invested, and so has the state, in recycling and organics recycling. And we are really moving forward very quickly on the idea of anaerobic digestion and gasification, which of course would be carbon free. But in answer, quick answer to your question, it would have to be landfilled. And I am not sure, we don't have any landfill capacity in, or very little in the metro area. So I am not sure what would happen, but it would affect all of the waste processing facilities across the state. So we would have a real dilemma.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Representative Swedenski, any other questions at this time?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. I think next on our list is Representative Hollins.
Thank you so much. And thank you for being here, Commissioner. My question is directed towards you. And I guess I'm just looking for a little bit of clarification, because my understanding is you are not going to, Ramsey County, where I am, is not going to be forced to close down the plant where this is being done, correct? It's just that it will not be counted towards being carbon free. Is that your understanding as well?
Commissioner Reinhart.
I'm not sure that I understand the question. I mean, if we are not allowed to process waste, I'm sorry, Representative, Madam Chair, that I'm not sure that I understand the question. So if we can't process it, it would have to go to a landfill.
Representative,
so would it be able to, okay, so
Madam Chair,
if you exempt that, I believe that that means that we would not be able to continue to do the waste to energy.
Representative Long, did you have a comment?
Maybe I could just help clarify, because I know this is confusing. So we have a renewable energy target in the bill, and we have a clean energy target in the bill. Right now, the renewable energy target does count waste to energy as renewable. That's current law. The carbon-free standard, as Commissioner pointed out, would not count waste energy, because waste energy produces carbon. So by 2040, all sources that produce carbon in the state would not be allowed to emit that carbon for energy production. But unless they pursued an exemption to the Public Utilities Commission based on affordability or reliability.
Madam Chair.
1 minute, please. Representative Hollins, does that answer your question?
It does, yep. I think I've got clarity. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Swedenski, did you have a response to it? Were you asking a question about that particular issue?
Yes, just a question to the committee and to research. So let us say that under the carbon-free standard, it wouldn't be allowed to generate electricity out of the plant for the solid waste. Would they still be allowed just to incinerate and not generate electricity?
So where should that question go? Is that to Mr. Eloff or to the author of the bill?
Madam Chair, Bob Eloff here. I think Representative Swedenski is correct in saying that if in 2040 the incinerators around the state no longer produce electricity, they're still allowed to incinerate solid waste materials.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Eloff.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Swedenski.
Thank you. Just a follow-up to that. So all we would have to do is just cut the wire, essentially, so we could still allow for the disposal of this waste. So as long as we could potentially write into this law that is still allowed, so that the electrical generation is still, you know, clean, I think that would be probably a good compromise.
So I think what we're in the questions, Commissioner Reinhart. I think really the questions of this period are intended to be about the bill. And so let's try to focus our questions to the bill, please. And so we have next on our list, Representative Grunhagen, I believe.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, my question is for Representative Long. And I brought this question up a couple meetings ago, and I was told to wait. But, you know, all of these alternative energy, solar and wind, are going to go kaput one day. And it's going to cost thousands, if not millions of dollars to take disassemble them and take them apart. They have caustic materials in them. I think we're creating one of the biggest environmental disasters in the history of Minnesota if we don't properly prepare to deal with that. So in your bill or under your consideration here, is there money set aside to deal with that and a plan where to put these things so they don't pollute our groundwater and the other things? Is there any plan set?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen, for the question. And I'm noticing a theme from our committee members on the other side of the aisle on deep concern over the environmental impact of our energy sources, but it seems to only apply to renewable energy and not to the other forms of energy that our state uses. If you're worried about waste disposal, I think we could look at nuclear waste, which will be radioactive for 10,000 years, and we don't have a solution at the moment for how that will be disposed. Or you could look at coal ash, which is an extremely toxic substance and has led to significant pollution around the country. But to address your specific question, if we're talking about wind, I know Representative Munson has an amendment we'll get to later, but if you're looking at wind blades, those are inert fiberglass. Those aren't toxic substances. And we, you know, there are companies that are actually looking into how to recycle those yet. Since this is a new industry, a lot of the end of life issues are coming down the path and are still being addressed and should be addressed. For solar energy, we know that there is interest in recycling solar panels. Some companies are taking back their solar panels. And there's been an active conversation with the Public Utilities Commission, Department of Commerce, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency about ensuring that we are managing solar panels well at the end of life. So frankly, I have very little concern about our ability to manage renewable energy end of life issues, particularly when compared to other forms of energy in our state.
Madam Chair. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. What about money being set aside to disassemble all these? Is it going to fall on local property taxpayers to take down these monuments of windmills and these solar gardens? Or where's the money going to come from to disassemble all this stuff? And the life expectancy, according to my local co-op, is much less than what they're being told.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen. It will not fall on local ratepayers. This will be the responsibility of the either the utilities or of the owners, the developers. The Public Utilities Commission right now is looking at financial assurance requirements for previous solar developments. So this is actively being looked at, and it is worth consideration. But I think as a reason to reject renewable energy, it really is a red herring.
Madam Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah. So in other words, the utilities are going to have to pick up the cost, but they're not going to pass that cost on to the ratepayers. That's your reasoning. I guess I don't agree with the reasoning. But further, Representative Long and members, you know, as far as nuclear, the rest of the world is recycling nuclear waste to the tune of 80% to 90%, according to what I've read. We could be doing that if we didn't have dumb laws on the books that prevented us from doing it. And nuclear provides excellent base load electricity, carbon free. So, I mean, we have ways to deal with that waste. We don't have any set plans on how to deal with this solar and windmill disaster. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Long, did you have a comment to that?
Very briefly, I was fortunate to work on with the Department of Energy when I was a lawyer on the disposal plans for nuclear waste. And with respect, we don't have a plan for how to get rid of our nuclear waste. There's no permitted facility in the United States to dispose of it. And if you'd like to see more nuclear waste recycling, then I'd certainly encourage you to take that up with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in Congress.
All right.
Madam Chair?
You know, I think Representative Grunhagen, we've got a bunch of people that would like to ask questions, and we have several amendments to get to. And so if you're going to make any other comment, can you please make it quick so we can move on, please?
Very quick. The I just got an email from a lobbyist for Xcel. They're disassembling some of their windmills in 6 years. They're wearing out.
Thank you, Mr.
Madam Chair. Could I say just one thing so that I can get off this call? And that is, we just want the time for the transition to
understood, Commissioner Reinhardt. Understood. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Next word, Representative Bowe is on the list, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope Commissioner Reinhardt is still on yet. I did have a question for her, and I'm not sure if she's here or not. But regardless, I know that Ramsey County has invested fairly significantly in infrastructure to handle solid waste. And I wonder if the sale of the electricity is part of what makes the numbers work while at the same time providing that service. But then in addition, I wanted to ask her thoughts on how we might handle emerald ash borer wood waste if the district energy plant goes offline and is no longer able to handle that kind of material. That's an issue for a lot of the metro counties and a good portion of outstate Minnesota, greater Minnesota counties as well. Thank you.
And Representative Bowe, I'm being told that Commissioner Reinhardt is no longer on the call.
Missed her by that much. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Did you have questions for the bill author?
Not particularly. I mean, if he wants to jump into that, he can. But Commissioner Reinhardt certainly gives insight from a metro county standpoint that the rest of us might not be able to. So,
Representative Long, did you have a comment?
Sure. Very briefly, I think certainly disposal of emerald ash borer is a real issue and something that we could have further conversations about. I don't know if we know what the situation will be in 19 years about emerald ash borer disposal, and I think we'd have plenty of time to work on those questions in the interim. But I guess the only thing I would add is that we're really putting in insufficient efforts to waste diversion at the moment in terms of recycling and composting, and that I think should be a lot more of our focus as a state in terms of how we're solving our overall waste challenge. Landfilling is not the only option.
Representative Bell?
Did you say we're putting in sufficient or insufficient?
Insufficient, not
okay.
Enough.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have on our list Representative Munson.
I thank you, Madam Chair. And I did have questions for the commissioner that dropped, and maybe the bill's author can just answer these, or if we're going to be discussing an amendment to end incinerating waste later, we can discuss it at that time. But my questions are really about how much methane is created by burying this trash versus the amount of carbon that's emitted during incineration. And how do we weigh that? Because my understanding is that methane is about 17 times more damaging to the atmosphere than carbon, and how the numbers work. And of course, I think somebody brought it up earlier that it doesn't prevent them from incinerating the trash. It just prevents them from generating electricity from burning the trash. So I don't know what we're solving, but we can, I think there's an amendment later, we can discuss it at that time.
I think you're right. And so that would probably be a good time for us to discuss it. Representative Swazinski.
We'll wait, Madam Chair.
Okay. So then I'm not seeing any other hands. And so I think maybe we will then transition to looking at amendments. And I believe the first amendment we have up is coded A13. Representative Hornstein, is that your amendment?
Yes, it is, Madam Chair.
Would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I move the A13 amendment. This amendment really comes from discussions we've had in the committee over the last week or two. Several members from both sides of the aisle raised issues around the life cycle impacts of carbon on various materials. And you know, the amendment process really is for us to look at some of the public testimony, look at what members have raised in committees and see if there's some things that can be added or enhancing, that can be added to the bill or enhancing the bill. And that's really what the A13 does. So members, we've seen efforts to reduce carbon emissions from our buildings, and we focused on making buildings more energy efficient, adopting clean energy. But to fully realize the benefits of energy efficiency and clean energy, we have to ensure that the materials we use to build and update our buildings and infrastructure are made in cleaner and more responsible ways. So reducing embodied emissions from the manufacture, transport, and construction process is essential to reach climate goals. Let me just say in conclusion, and I'll have a couple more short comments, Madam Chair. Buying building and infrastructure materials from US-based manufacturers use cleaner processes, support the twin goals of building a strong domestic workforce and lowering greenhouse gas emissions. And so this amendment that I've worked on with the United Steelworkers and the Blue Green Alliance, I think really addresses that issue of keeping good paying jobs in the United States. It is simply a study. We're asking the Department of Administration to study what a buy clean procurement initiative would look like in Minnesota. So there's no additional regulations. There's no additional mandates. We are simply looking at a study, Madam Chair and members, to ensure that Minnesota can procure materials in the least carbon intensive way. I think that is very appropriate and important to add to this bill that really addresses a carbon-free future. And I'm happy to answer questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Long, do you have some comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the amendment author, Representative Hornstein. I fully support this amendment. This is a really important conversation that we're having. And I also want to thank Representative Lislegard for being a real champion of this conversation and doing, I think we need to do all we can to help make sure that we are helping support local businesses when we're moving forward on our transition. So thank you to the bill author. I support it.
Thank you, Representative Long. And is there discussion to the amendment? I see Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a question, have we already received budget targets for this committee? As far as spending accounts and the rest?
Not to my knowledge. We'll refer to Representative Long.
Yeah, if that's a question for me, then the answer is no. And if your question is, are we going to rule out of order amendments that would authorize spending, I defer to the chair, but I would think maybe not, since this bill is being laid over and won't be taken back up formally until after our budget targets are put forward.
Thank you, Representative Long. Representative Swazinski? Did you have anything further?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Then moving on to Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hornstein, you have an interesting amendment. My question to you is, haven't there been other studies done on sourcing of materials, building materials? It seems like Minnesota is about 10 years behind Canada in our building materials and how we change, and we're kind of following a lot of other states and countries. Why another study? Why can't we look to what Europe has done or what Canada has done to source their materials for buildings?
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair and Representative Munson, that's an excellent question. And it's really a question I've asked, and that's why I'm putting this forward. It's not necessarily just another study. This is a study that really was impacted by looking at other states, in fact. And that's a good point, Representative Munson. Often as legislators, we look to see, well, what are other states doing if we have an issue of concern? So this is really modeled after legislation from the state of Washington. We have a number of different criteria for procurement, but we don't have this type of criteria. We don't have a buy clean initiative. And the reason I feel strongly about this is that, you know, if we are not going to do something as a state and lead a state government as an example, you know, how can we expect the private sector and other sectors of our economy to follow? So we are, in fact, trying to look at some of the – this study, in fact, I hope will look at other states and you mentioned Canada and overseas for some direction on how we do this. But this is a new thing. We do not have a procurement policy that has this as a criteria.
Okay.
Representative Munson.
Follow up. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I mean – I like the idea of determining a better way to source materials for houses. I just feel like this is much more appropriate to go through the housing committee, where you're going to get more feedback from the industry than from the energy committee. I mean, one simple change that would really help would be to ban asphalt shingles in the state of Minnesota and use steel instead, that's recyclable, instead of ending up in landfills. But I think this is more appropriate for the housing committee. Is this going to be going to the housing committee or just to commerce, or is it going to get rolled into an omnibus bill here for the energy, Representative Long or Madam Chair, do you know?
I believe the motion was to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Yeah, and so I won't support it for this committee. I think it really needs to be vetted through the housing committee, especially because that's where we're going to have the greatest feedback and input and impact in order to improve this bill. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Munson. Next, we have Representative Liz Ligard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Hornstein, thank you so much for working on this. It is a passion. I never like to say that I agree with Representative Munson. I don't think necessarily far enough for me. I will be supporting it because the conversation and the data needs to be gathered. Going one step further, I would love for Representative Munson to join me in a letter to the President of the United States requiring that all minerals be subject to the same environmental and labor standards as this country. So. It doesn't go far enough, but I will be supporting it, and I thank you for putting the effort forward.
Thank you, Representative Liz Ligard. Representative Munson, did you want to respond to that since you're – no? Okay. Seeing no further discussion, we can take a vote on the amendment. And so I guess we are just doing a voice vote, so you can unmute yourselves, and all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay?
No, nay.
No.
Ayes have it. the motion prevails. And the next amendment we have is the A19.
Madam Chair, that's mine again, Madam Chair, and I'd like to move the A19.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein moves the A19. Is there any discussion? Or would you like to explain your amendment, Representative?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I know this is
Madam
going
Chair.
To be. Oh.
Apologies
for
the interruption.
Madam Chair.
Wanted to make sure that we were doing the correct amendment. I know Representative Hornstein had the A19 and the A20, and my understanding was he wanted to move the A20, but.
No, well, the A19, I think, is the one that does not have reference to the.
Okay, great. My mistake.
Thank you for clarifying.
Thank you for looking out for me, Mr. Chair.
And thank you for keeping me on track. So, yes, Representative Hornstein, to your amendment.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I know this is actually one that I know Representative Munson had referred to earlier, and it does deal with the issue of waste and incineration. And so I'd like to move this amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. And next, do we need to explain
yeah,
it any further?
I'll briefly explain it. I know there'll
yes,
be
please.
Questions and debate. So,
okay.
So, Madam Chair, you know, this just builds on some of the conversation we just had earlier about the way that waste incineration is treated in this bill. And so just to preface this conversation, I want to be clear because I think there was some confusion, quite frankly, as a result of Commissioner Reinhart's testimony. This amendment, there is nothing in this amendment or, in fact, in this bill that will lead to an immediate shutdown or phasing out of garbage incineration. It may in 19 years, but not now. Okay, so let's be very clear about this. This particular amendment will not add more expense or regulation or prevent garbage incineration anywhere in the state. It will not lead to shutting down any plants. It will not lead to more mixed municipal waste landfilling. I think that needs to be very clear at the outset. Number two, there is an important debate about waste management and the environmental impacts of various waste management tools. There is a waste management hierarchy in the state. So there is an important, there is a debate. I do not deny there is a debate. Do the ash landfills that, that incinerators lead to, are they better, worse, the same in terms of environmental impacts as regular landfills? You know, that's a debate. I have my opinions. I think the ash is hazardous. It has to go into a special hazardous waste landfill or hazardous special landfill, and it's more expensive to manage their groundwater impacts. Okay, that's one question. Are the scrubbers, is the air pollution control equipment effective in addressing air emissions? That's another debate for the Environment Committee. Do incinerators interfere with recycling and composting? Do they complement it? I believe that because a large fraction of the waste materials are recyclable and compostable, it interferes with that process. But that's not today's debate. Today's debate is whether garbage incineration and the particular facility mentioned in this or types of facilities mentioned in the potential types of facilities mentioned in this amendment are in fact clean, renewable, carbon-free on the same level as wind, solar, hydro, et cetera. That's the question before us. And I would argue, members, that on a per kilowatt basis, and we're talking about energy here, we're not talking about waste management, we're talking about energy. And on a per kilowatt basis, according to the Environmental Protection Agency, the greenhouse gas emission profile from garbage incinerators produces more carbon than coal, oil, natural gas. And so for that reason, we should not have garbage incineration as an energy source, as a designated as a clean energy source on the same level as wind and solar. That is simply the question here. Yes or no? Is this equivalent to wind and solar? I argue, this amendment argues, it is not. And finally, Madam Chair and members, this amendment deals with a kind of, and I will say for the record, I do not believe any garbage incinerator should be considered renewable energy and be credited as renewable energy. Again, they're credited as renewable energy. I don't believe any garbage incinerator should be in this classification. This amendment simply deals with the largest kind of incinerator and an incinerator that has impacts in nearby communities that fit different criteria around environmental justice. That is the purpose of this amendment, and I would be happy to take any questions. It is a facility that is located just a matter of blocks from the area I represent. Thank you, Madam Chair. Happy to engage in this debate. I know there'll be many questions and conversation.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Long?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I support the amendment, and I appreciate your efforts, Representative Hornstein, to bring this important discussion forward. And I share your concerns with the facility that you've described and also with the real concerns that local communities and environmental justice advocates have raised around that facility. And so I think this is a reasonable step to acknowledge that a facility with that much concern in particular should not be considered renewable energy.
Thank you, Representative Long. And so is there a discussion? I see Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hornstein, thanks for having the discussion today on this amendment. I'd like you and other members of the committee to start looking at energy as its entire supply chain, right? I know that burning trash emits more carbon than solar or wind during energy generation, but we need to start looking at the entire supply chain. And that starts with where the materials come from to produce the energy, whether it's mining, extraction, refining, manufacturing, installing the unit, and then dismantling and recycling and decommissioning it. For burning trash, the trash is already hauled there, and we're actually reducing the amount of greenhouse gases by not burying it and creating methane. We are currently digging up old landfills and incinerating the trash because the materials that were buried in the landfill are causing damage to our water. We're also trucking out tons and tons of garbage to Wisconsin and Iowa from Minnesota because of restrictions on permitting or because we have too much. I don't know what the market is, but that's a fact. And so, starting the supply chain for incinerating trash by starting with a negative because we're actually reducing methane into the atmosphere is a benefit. And we offset that by emitting some carbon during production. I do want to address when you talked about that this only impacts trash burning facilities 19 years from now. That's true. But if they're going to be doing maintenance on the facility, if they're going to be fixing something to reduce the amount of carbon that they're putting out today, and that machinery or that new addition has a 100-year useful life, they're not going to do it if they can't operate in 19 years. So you impact decisions by passing this amendment today. You're going to be impacting their decisions that they make on their business now. And so you will be impacting this severely. If they know that they're not going to exist in 19 years, they're not going to improve their facility to reduce carbon or do what, you know, make decisions for this industry. And then you also discussed the fly ash that we get from coal as being an issue or the ash from this facility. This bill is going to be basically ending coal-fired production for energy. And we use fly ash from coal-fired power plants to make our roads for concrete. It's one of the largest ingredients in our concrete. And of course, asphalt comes from tar, which comes from fossil fuels as well. So, maybe there's a need for ash from this facility that we could use in roads and bridges. I don't know what the science is behind it, but that's maybe something we should consider. But I think that this amendment will impact this industry starting now. It isn't a 19 years from now. It's major decisions are being made in this industry. And then my question to you, if you want to respond to those things, is what is the difference between the A19 and the A20? I held them up and I couldn't figure out what was different.
Representative Hornstein. Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. And Representative Munson, you raised some really important questions, and I've noted them, and I'm going to try to answer them briefly one by one. And I know you referred to this both in your question and earlier today. So the question of methane is really important. And the best way to address methane, which is a very potent greenhouse gas emission, is it comes from the organic part of the waste stream. Now, the Pollution Control Agency has determined in a recent study that almost one-third of our municipal waste stream is organics. That's food waste, that's napkins, paper, soiled paper, these kinds of things. And that waste is best, according to our hierarchy, best managed through organics composting. And we have, and I know Representative Bo knows a lot about this, we actually have curbside organics composting in the city of Minneapolis. That's a really, really important way to divert organics from landfills and, of course, incinerators, who burning food waste really makes very little sense. And so we need to step it up on organics composting. That's the best way to deal with methane. Secondly, you talked about hauling trash out of state. You know, this has been a problem. And again, we have to emphasize that the ash has to be landfilled too. That's anywhere from a quarter to a third of the garbage that actually goes into an incinerator ends up as ash. The ash, in fact, is a more dangerous way to landfill, because the toxins, the heavy metals, are concentrated in the ash in the combustion process. And so that's why the ash has to go to a what's called a special waste landfill. I would argue the safest way to deal with ash is that it should go to a federally licensed hazardous waste landfill, because it has the characteristics of hazardous waste. So what are we really getting by landfilling ash versus landfilling garbage? I think that that's a question that really needs to be addressed when we talk about this is better than landfilling. And to your question, Representative Munson, about using ash in materials, Hennepin County, I would say 30 years ago, went through a whole process that they deemed, they called it ash utilization. They were going to put ash in road paving materials. That was summarily rejected because of the significant environmental impacts. You know, we've tried for so many years to get lead out of the public infrastructure, and I think the Hennepin County commissioners concluded correctly, it doesn't make any sense to put lead back into the public infrastructure. So ash utilization has been summarily rejected in the state. It's not reappeared, and I'm glad it hasn't, because that would be a much worse way to manage the ash, even than landfilling. So, you know, I hope I've answered your questions. And then finally, Representative Munson, we did two amendments just because I think there was some talk of whether the Pollution Control Agency commissioner should have some discretion over the definition of an environmental justice area. And I just sort of decided that that would not be a proper way to go, even though that was an option that I think was on the table. So I chose the A19 for that reason.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Okay, so just want to make sure people can be as brief as possible with questions, and we've got lots of people yet to ask, and we have lots of amendments yet to get to. So next up is Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I hate to be a pain in the butt lawyer, but that's what I am. You can only be what you are. And my question is about the need for a brief oral amendment to fix a technical issue. On line 1.12 of the amendment, it reads, the facility has a permitted maximum capacity of 1,000 tons per day, which my reading of that, and Mr. Eliff or Representative Hornstein can correct me if I'm wrong, is that it would only qualify if the maximum capacity was exactly 1,000 tons per day. So if it was 1,001 or 999, it would not qualify under this section. I wonder if Representative Hornstein would be open to a friendly oral amendment to strike the word of and change it to greater than.
Madam Chair. Yes.
I can answer that question, or if you are, it sounds like you may be referring that to Mr. Eliff.
That was my suggestion, but if you have a
you
response,
you had that ongoing with Mr. Eliff look on your face, so I.
can we phone a friend? Representative or not representative, Mr. Eliff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Representative Stevenson's point is well taken. It's up to Representative Hornstein whether he's comfortable with that wording, or an alternative would be to say 1,000 tons per day or more, if it's the actual 1,000 figure that may be in question here. I'm hearing positive.
Well, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, I think that I have thought, I did actually catch this later yesterday, and Representative Stevenson, you're absolutely correct. It would be the author's intent to I think, do the latter, and I think that's what you were suggesting, the latter suggestion, and I think that's what you're suggesting, Representative Stevenson. I think that we're looking at a facility that is permitted at 1,000 tons per day. At 1,000 tons per day. That would be the author's intention.
Oh, so you don't, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
You don't mean to include facilities that have greater than 1,000 tons per day?
Well, we currently don't have one, but, you know, I would think that, you know, if there would be one in the future that would be 1,000 or more, you know, I think we could, that would be also my intention. But currently we have a facility that has 1,000 tons per day permit, and that is the one that I would like included in this bill. That is the author's intention, or in this.
So, Mr. Eliff, would you like to put together what the oral amendment would be? Or would there necessarily need to be one? Now I'm confused.
Madam Chair, I'm hearing conflicting signals. I thought we were talking about page 1, line 12, before the period, insert or more.
Oh, so that it reads 1,000. If Madam Chair?
Representative Hornstein.
1,000 or more would be acceptable to me. I don't know if that's what Representative Stevenson was looking at.
Representative Stevenson?
Yes, I think Mr. Elif's suggestion is great, and with the chair and Representative Hornstein's permission, I would make that motion to offer that oral amendment.
And Representative Hornstein, that's acceptable?
That's acceptable. 1,000 or more would include the facility that I'm concerned with.
Okay, so then Representative Hornstein, do you want to move the oral amendment to the amendment?
I would move the Stevenson oral amendment.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Madam Chair?
Representative Swazinski.
You know, if you've got members who have their hand up, maybe they'd like to discuss these things before you'd actually vote on them.
I'm sorry, Representative Swazinski, I'm new at this. Please accept my apologies. I accept my apologies. Is there any discussion after the vote? I guess I feel bad and I apologize. Representative Swazinski, would you like to make a comment?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. The question would be, so if you're going to be not naming a specific facility, but simply going after a certain amount of capacity through a permit, how would the county, who would they have to seek a permit to have their capacity lowered to under 1,000?
Good question. Representative Hornstein, are you?
Madam Chair, Representative Swazinski, the permitting agency for garbage incinerators is the Pollution Control Agency. There, in certain cities or there are local units of government that sometimes have to approve zoning variances, et cetera, for these types of facilities. So, but in terms of the air permit and the overall permitting process at the state level, that would be under the jurisdiction of the Pollution Control Agency.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then Representative Hornstein, so the county then to get around this amendment would just simply have to go to the MPCA and request for a lower amount of capacity in order to continue if this bill. And then my secondary question along this amendment. So Representative Bowe mentioned a little bit that energy generation through garbage incineration actually subsidizes garbage collection. Is there any estimate that if this amendment were to go on, how much garbage collection costs would go up in 19 years or sooner if this bill would move forward?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. That's an excellent question, Representative Swazinski. I want to emphasize that in the near term, this will have no financial impact, either on local taxpayers or the degree to which any revenue generated from a facility is funneled into a recycling or composting program. You know, I can't, so that's the short-term impacts of this amendment, which I can speak to with a great degree of confidence. With regard to, we're asking counties to make a transition over a period of 19 years. And I would argue strongly that 19 years is an adequate time. I think it could be done in far less, in fact. But 19 years is an adequate time for counties to make a transition towards the top of the waste management hierarchy, which involves reduction, reuse, recycling, and organics compost. That's how we're going to get to the 75% recycling composting goal that we have in the metro area. So, I can't project out into the future any financial impacts, only to say that this transition needs to be accelerated and it will not have any short-term impact.
Madam Chair, just a follow-up.
Representative Swazinski.
And thank you, Representative Hornstein. I understand it's really tough. I'd like a roll call on this amendment, but also if you're just a guess, Representative Horsing. Do you think it would double it? I mean, just we're kind of projecting out into the future. I know it's tough. Do you think it would double people's garbage costs, triple them? What would be the estimate?
Madam Chair and Representative Swazinski, I would say the opposite is in effect. I think if we move away from the most expensive way of waste management, which is garbage incineration, it is highly subsidized by taxpayers, property taxpayers, and move away from that towards the top of the waste management hierarchy, I think it would in fact save money over the long term. So, you know, that savings can start to kick in as soon as we really focus on the top of the waste management hierarchy. It is much more efficient and much more cost effective to reduce, reuse, recycle, and work and do organics than landfilling and incineration.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Is there more discussion on the amendment, Representative Lee? Or do we need to vote on the amendment to the amendment first? I think we'll take Representative Lee's comment first.
Thank you, Chair Acom, and I will try to keep my remarks short. I just want to say thank you to Representative Hornstein for bringing this amendment forward. You know, in this discussion of the amendment, what I have been hearing from our members of the committee is talking about the financial impact to, you know, businesses and the industry. But I really want us to bring this back to really center this around public health in our community. And I know that that's a little bit outside of our purview, but if you'll indulge me, Madam Chair, really want to talk about how this is impacting the local communities that's right next to them. And, you know, the facility that Representative Hornstein is referring to is right next to the district that I represent within my Senate district, where we have some of the highest asthma hospitalization rate in the state of Minnesota. And when you think about the burning of this trash and some of the pollution that we are seeing, even though we have, you know, I'm not an engineer, even though we have the technology to lower the threshold of some of us, we are still polluting out there and impacting our communities. And so when we think about this, I really want the members of this committee and all of us to think about the impact that it's having to the local communities there. And we cannot just think about the financial impact that's going to have for the industry. We need to think about the lives of the Minnesotans who are being impacted daily by this, whether we make a decision to include this or not going to the future. And so thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to speak on this. And thank you, Representative Hornstein, for bringing this forward.
Seeing no further discussion on the A19 amendment, and I believe there was a roll call requested. How do we go about that? Does the author start? Or the author of the bill?
Madam Chair, I think you just call the roll and then the clerk will go for it.
All right, that's awesome. Can we call the roll, please?
No worries, I'll take it from here.
Thank you.
Chair Acom.
Aye.
Representative Long.
Aye.
Minority Leader Swazinski. Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Bowe.
No.
Representative Christensen.
Aye.
Representative Franson.
No.
Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative Igo.
No.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lippertz.
Aye.
Representative Lislegard. Representative Lislegard. Representative Meckland.
No.
Representative Munson.
No.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
There being 9 ayes and 7 nays, motion prevails. And so let's see, now we move on to the A20, or Representative Hornstein, are you withdrawing the A20?
I think the A19 is still before us, and I'm happy to answer any questions from the committee about it. A19 as amended.
So I think the vote we just took was actually on the A19, and it's probably me confusing people, and for that I do apologize. I think we just passed the A19 as amended.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry, I wasn't sure if we were voting on, the oral amendment. So thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have no more amendments. So thank you. Thank you, members of the committee. And I appreciate your adding the A19 as amended. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
You did a good job. I was confused.
Oh, no. we'll get through this somehow. So now we're moving on, and we still have several amendments to go, and we're getting close to the end of time. So let's try to get through this quickly, please. Next, we have the A13 amendment. Who's offering the A13?
I think that was Hornstein's.
Madam Chair, we voted on the A13 already.
I'm sorry. We're down on the A5. Okay, you guys, thank you for key. I was just testing you. We're on the A5. Who's offering the A5? And it's amended.
Sorry, Madam Chair. This is Chris, Representative Swazinski. I'm just trying to keep – I don't have a list of the order that you're taking up amendments, so I've got to be able to catch up here. So.
Well, I do apologize because I'm just making us all just a little confused. But thank you for bearing with me. And so, Representative Swazinski, are you offering the A5?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move the A5 amendment before the committee. I appreciate the robust conversations about the bill before us. The A5 is really following around. So under current law, utilities have the ability to request to the PUC that they are under duress and that they would need relief from statewide mandates. And this would really get down to the fact that we've heard from a lot of the miners, we've heard a lot of from the large industrials, whether you're a forester person, a logger, an agribusiness person, that the potential mandates that are coming down the pipe could have exceptionally detrimental effects to their ability to actually produce here in the state of Minnesota. And this would allow for independent businesses, industries that are affected by these mandates to also have an opportunity to have their voice heard at the PUC rather than just the large utilities. Utilities in general, especially investor-owned, because of the nature, really have no incentive for lower rates. And so they really would never have to look to modify or delay one of these mandates because they've maybe potentially built them into their system. And so this allows the actual people that are paying the bills to have some sort of a regress. I think it's just a common sense ability to allow folks that are going to be impacted and with potential job losses. As Mr. Carey said just earlier this week, talking about the Keystone pipeline, say, well, those folks that are out of work through Keystone, well, they can just go make solar panels while they eat cake. And, I think this would give some of the mining companies, this would give some of the opportunities, the real job creators in northern Minnesota, southwest Minnesota, a general voice. And I think I'd appreciate your support on this amendment.
Representative Long.
I thank you, Madam Chair. I oppose the amendment. As the author noted, utilities can already request this, and I don't believe our utilities are going to be particularly shy if they have concerns with the targets as they're being implemented. And I don't believe this is good policy. We'd be opening it up to any member of the public to oppose. And I think that would be really burdensome for the Public Utilities Commission to manage. So I ask members to oppose the amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd also like a roll call on that amendment.
Of course. And any discussion? I see Representative Munson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I didn't have a chance to meet up with Representative Swazinski to ask a question. But maybe somebody from the commission is on that could answer this. But what is the process if someone has concerns about these standards? Can they not go through the commission to request information, or have no voice whatsoever in this process?
Representative Swazinski.
Madam Chair, Representative Munson, it's my belief under current law, the only folks that can ask for relief are the utilities. And so this is not necessarily saying they don't have regress, but they cannot simply ask for relief. If they are to ask for relief, they need to somehow talk the utility into going on their behalf to give them either individually relief or the utility as a whole, is my understanding. I think there was a court case along this line, or there was a time in past where this was rejected. And so we're trying to fix that historical mistake that didn't allow folks that are actually paying the bill to have some individual voice at the PUC.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Swiatkowski. And I see, to address Representative Long's concerns, I mean, it's saying that the commission can do this at its own discretion or at the request of any person. It doesn't require them to do this at the request of any person. So, I support this language. It feels like it's giving a voice to the ratepayers and to people that are really impacted by these standards. And so, yeah, I'll support the motion. Thank you.
Representative Lisliger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess my question would be for Representative Wazinski. I have actually been sitting in the PUC for some of them hearings, and I have heard my friends in the mining industry and the logging industry testify. So I'm a little confused how they don't have a voice when I watch them testify before and or against the commission. So I'm confused. Can you help me understand? Because you just said that they don't have a voice, and I've actually watched them testify.
Representative Swiatkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lisliger, I think the ability to actually bring it forth. I think when you've heard them testify before the PUC, it's because it's through a different action. What we're saying is that under current action to get regress from these current laws, only the utility may come first. So unless a utility would happen to come before the PUC and ask that, the costs are too high or give us an opportunity, it is at that hearing that the mines can testify. What we're saying is that regardless, let's say the utility itself didn't want to bring something forward. This would allow the mines to actually bring something forward on their own as a ratepayer, or if I'm correct.
Representative Long.
Madam Chair, yes. I think I just wanted to clarify that Representative Lisliger, you're exactly right. The Public Utilities Commission process does allow for involvement of the mines, of forest and paper industry, of anybody who wants to participate. And these conversations would likely come up as a part of their regular resource planning process, where those entities are able to participate fully. So the amendment, in my view, is not necessary for those reasons.
Seeing no further discussion and a roll call being requested, the clerk can take the roll. The chair votes no.
Representative Long.
No.
Minority Leader Swiatkowski.
Yes.
Representative Bierman.
No.
Representative Bowe.
Yes.
Representative Christensen.
No.
Representative Franson.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yes.
Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Igo.
Yes.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lippert.
No.
Representative Lisliger.
No.
Representative Mecklen.
Yes.
Representative Munson.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
No.
There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. Next, we have the A3 event, or excuse me, amendment. And next, we're going to have the A4, just so the person knows they're on deck. So
cool.
We hear, please, about the A3. Is anyone offering the A3? If not, we can move on I think it was offered by Representative Swazinski. Are you not offering that one, Representative? Maybe not.
Madam Chair, just hang on a second. I'm just trying to catch up with you here. Give me a moment. Yes, I can offer the A3 amendment.
Thank you. Would you like to tell us about your amendment?
This is a pretty straightforward amendment. We've heard this one before in committee. Because of the wants and needs potentially of the future, we've heard a lot about that. Well, we're not sure what the market will be like. We're not sure what the needs will be like in 19 years. We want to make sure that we have a all above the above energy policy. And this would allow for the provision for new construction of nuclear power facilities in the state. It would lift the current moratorium. You know, if we're going to be able to get 100% carbon free energy, we'll need every tool really in the toolkit. And I think this makes some common sense. You know, we're not sure what the policies will be. We're not sure what the environment will be in 19 years. And we want to make sure that we have the most opportunity for job growth, most opportunity for utilities to potentially, if this bill was to go forward, to meet this goal. If that's truly what we want, I think we need to have everyone, every technology available. So
Representative Long.
Support their committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd ask members to oppose the amendment. The current bill counts existing nuclear towards the carbon-free goals, and I don't believe there's been a demonstration that we need new nuclear facilities in the state. So I'd ask members to oppose it.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, aye. Say nay.
No.
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 The nays have it, and the motion does not prevail. Next is the A4 amendment. Who's offering that one? And next we'll have, after that is A6. So who is offering the A4 amendment? Representative Swazinski, did you submit the A4? Representative Swazinski, are you there?
Madam Chair, I believe Representative Bowe is going to be offering that amendment.
I'm not the only one who's confused today.
Oh, yeah. It's okay. You're doing a great job.
We'll get through this. Representative Bode, are you ready to present the A4 amendment?
Madam Chair, yes. I did not know that I was offering this, but I think it's a wonderful idea, and I would recommend a yes vote.
Representative Long?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would urge members to oppose the amendment. The amendment for members' understanding would focus on some factors over others and Public Utilities Commission determination. And so, for example, technical feasibility or transmission constraints would not be put in the top tier, and I don't think that makes much sense. So I'd ask us to oppose the amendment.
Seeing no discussion on the amendment, we will...
Madam Chair.
Representative Mecklen.
I apologize. I couldn't find my raise hand button fast enough. I'd like to request a roll call if you could.
And still seeing no discussion and a roll call being requested, the clerk will take the roll and chair votes no.
Representative Long.
No.
Representative Minority Lead Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Bierman.
No.
Representative Bo.
Aye.
Representative Christensen.
No.
Representative Franson.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Igo.
Yes.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lippert.
No.
Representative Lislegard.
No.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Munson.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. So we have up the A6. who's offering the A6.
Madam Chair, this is Representative Mecklen. I'll be offering the A6 amendment.
Go ahead, just share your amendment, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment would allow for fossil fuel plants with carbon capture and storage technologies to qualify as carbon-free. And particularly after all the conversation we heard today with the trash incinerators, with the technology of carbon capture as well as storage, this would easily help take this delightful conversation we've had today and make it even better for these facilities that, and rather than just have them incinerate garbage and unplug them, they could actually produce something as a side effect. I think this is a really good compromise, and I hope you can support this.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd ask members to oppose it. This sets an 80% threshold for carbon capture, meaning that there could be 20% emissions from plants. Minn Kota testified in our hearing that they could achieve 90%, so not sure why we'd set the bar at 80%. And also, if emitting some carbon was the most reliable and affordable way to achieve the carbon reductions, then utility could just go to the Public Utilities Commission and ask that the targets be adjusted.
Discussion, I see Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also support the amendment. I think this is a common sense. This really looks at technology that is actually on the ground, that's feasible, that companies are actually just are willing to look at. And I think if we close the door to this today, then you're closing off some potential into the future.
Madam Chair, you're on mute.
We can't hear you, Madam Chair.
Of course I'm on mute. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the
amendment. Madam Chair.
We need a roll call. A roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Representative Long.
No.
Minority Leader Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Bierman.
No.
Representative Bowe.
Aye.
Representative Christensen.
No.
Representative Franson.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Igo.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lippert.
No.
Representative Lislegard.
Aye.
Representative Meckland.
Aye.
Representative Munson.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
No.
Let's see. We have 7 ayes and 10 nays. The motion does not prevail. Oh, it's 9 nays. The motion does not prevail. excuse me, the amendment does not prevail. Representative Swazinski, did you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair. We're getting close on time here. I would move to table the bill and I ask for a roll call.
Okay, and so Representative Long?
I think a motion to table is not available, but I'll just point out that we're laying the bill over, so I don't know that the effect will be any different. So I'll ask members to oppose it.
Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Akam?
No.
Representative Long?
No.
Minority Leader Swazinski?
Aye.
Representative Bierman.
No.
Representative Bowe.
Aye.
Representative Christensen.
No.
Representative Franson.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Igo.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lippertz.
No.
Representative Lislegard.
I have a question, and I don't know. I didn't raise my hand fast enough. And I don't understand the process. We're still going to be hearing the bill and the amendments moving forward just on a different day. Is that what this means?
Yes. Yeah, so instead of tabling it, we'll be laying it over and taking it back up later.
Okay. No.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Munson.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
No.
Seven ayes, 10 nays. The motion does not prevail. And so given the timing, do we need to lay it over for another day? Representative Swazinski, did you have a question?
Sorry, Madam Chair, I forgot to take my hand down from my last thing.
Nope. Oh, okay. Thank you. Representative Munson, it looks like you have a new hand.
Yeah, I do have a new hand, Madam Chair, and I'm just wondering, would it be possible to reconvene after session today to discuss the rest of the amendments, or what's the plan?
It's a great question. I think that probably is not an option for today. Let's consult with Representative Long about that, please.
Sure, Madam Chair. The Speaker needs to sign off on any meeting times that are not in our regular window. So unfortunately, we don't have the flexibility that we've had in past sessions. So we're not going to be able to reconvene today. So the bill will have to be taken up on another committee meeting.
Okay. With that, members, Representative Munson, did you have a follow-up, or is your hand just still okay?
No, I'm just. We need to get through this bill. So yeah.
Yeah, and we will. So with that, the meeting is adjourned for today. Thank you, members.